We've already sleepwalked into a surveillance internet, so to say, with Web 2, controlled by big tech. We shouldn't do that again. So we should have what I call an open metaverse, where we control our own data, our own assets, and our own identity, using Web 3 technologies that will enable that.
Hey guys, it's Trish from Montes. Don't miss great tech stories from our guests and our hosts, Jackie Nimenk and Wato Del Barre, only here at Mangtas Nation.
Welcome to Mangtas Nation Season 2. This season is all about tech of the future. We'll be sharing real-world experiences and featuring astounding guests to help guide you in your tech journey. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Hello, everyone. Here's to another day of bringing about tech learning and inspiration from today's star of the show. Now, our guest is the digital speaker. He is a future tech strategist who thinks about how emerging technologies change organizations, societies, and the metaverse. He is also the founder of Dataflock. He's an international keynote speaker, 4 times author, and an entrepreneur. Listeners, let us welcome Dr. Mark van Remenam. Hey, Mark. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great for having me. Thank you for having me.
We're very, very happy to have you and honored to have you here on the show. This is going to be a very interesting show, especially for a lot of our listeners in tech. Now, so before we start with our round of questions, I'll give the floor to you, Mark, to just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, thank you very much, Jackie, for the introduction. You basically shared most of it already, but so I've been involved in emerging technologies for over a decade. Been a keynote speaker for over a decade. When the pandemic hit, I couldn't fly anymore, so I reinvented myself and created the digital speaker, which allowed me to do keynotes as a hologram, as an avatar. So I basically stepped into the metaverse a few years ago already. My books are on big data, blockchain, and AI. And my fourth book was published a month ago, which is called Step Into the Metaverse, which is all about the next iteration of the metaverse. Sorry, the next iteration of the internet, which is called the metaverse. I think that's an absolutely fascinating topic. I went down a rabbit hole interviewing about 100 people, in-depth interviews, and another 150 surveys. So I had to collect data from people actually creating the metaverse. It's a fascinating topic, and I'm very excited to talk about that.
And we're very excited to talk to you about it and learn more about it as well. But just out of curiosity, did you write this book during the pandemic too?
No, I wrote it in from November till January last year. I was approached by my publisher in October. All contracts were signed in November. I had to deliver the draft version by end of January. And I did, so it meant 3 months of nonstop work, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, pretty much. So I did all the interviews, and then by mid-December, my publisher was really getting worried. So when are you delivering your first chapters? And I said, don't worry, it'll come. I started writing on December 26th, and I finished on January 28th.
Just right after Christmas. Wow. Yeah. Like a month and like 2 days to write this book. Maybe apart from, you know, writing about the metaverse and emerging tech, you can also write about productivity. A lot of people can use productivity tips from you.
It's very interesting that you say that, because I actually use a lot of automation in order to make this happen, because otherwise I would not have been able to do this. So that's actually a very relevant remark, because I used AI to help me with this.
Fantastic. Very, very interesting stuff. Now, before we go on to more detailed questions, for our listeners who are not really very familiar with the metaverse, seeing that we're going to touch up a little bit more about that, how can you explain the concept of the metaverse and, you know, this type of reality in layman's terms?
Sure. So the way I explain the metaverse, it's basically the convergence of the physical and the digital worlds. And that sounds very simple, and it also sounds very abstract. What I noticed from writing the book is, I talked to about 250 people, And I got 250 different definitions of what the metaverse is. Now, everyone thinks differently of what the metaverse is, how it's going to change our world. A lot of people think that the metaverse equals virtual reality. A lot of people think that the metaverse equals gaming. Both I think are not true. I think the metaverse is much more than that. And the metaverse is, as I said, it's the convergence of the physical and the digital worlds. And it basically means, you know, the physical meeting in the digital world. That's the one, and that can be seen as, you know, virtual reality. It can be even seen as this recording for the podcast. You know, because I am in Sydney, Australia. You are in Belgium and in Singapore, Wouter. And you know, so we are here physically, geographically apart, but we're meeting in a digital realm. So you could argue that this is sort of part of the metaverse, very, very early stage of the version of the metaverse, because the metaverse is very much 3D and the internet, as we know, is very much 2D. You know, when you bring the physical into the digital, you can also think about, for example, using digital twins, yeah, exact digital replicas of products, of cars, robots, manufacturing equipment, or even entire factories, or even entire supply chains in the virtual world, so that you can interact with them in the virtual world, which will have an effect in the physical world. So that's one part of the metaverse. The other part is augmented reality, where the digital meets into the physical world, which I think is actually going to be having a much bigger impact on the world than virtual reality, because we can add nearly infinite layers on top of reality. We can add entertainment layers. For example, have a flying purple dragon above Times Square or whatsoever, that you can view from different vantage points. You can have applications for city officials to better understand traffic flows, that they can literally see when walking in the city. You can have virtual events where you have augmented reality experiences or hybrid events. Or you can have, again, the digital twins, where you have an overlay if you need to fix, for example, an engine. You see an overlay with glasses of that engine, and it tells you, you know, which wire to cut, which bolt to twist, etc., in order to fix it. And I think that is actually will have a much bigger impact on our society than the virtual reality. But the bottom line is that the metaverse converges of the physical and the digital, which sort of creates a digital experience, which is, I didn't coin this word, it's a horrible word, but it really explains quite well what it means. And in this digital environment, you know, this is like an endless blue ocean of opportunity, because it allows us to create all kinds of new interactions, 3D interactions, which I think is really, really exciting.
So convergence both ways, physical to digital, digital to physical. I really like how you said everyone had a different definition of the metaverse. I can definitely relate to that. But there's one thing you also mentioned. I just want to follow up on this. You said the metaverse will be the next version of the internet. Now, here's another term that I get very different definitions on. It's Web3. Now, how would you call how would you define Web3 in relation to the metaverse and in relation to actually being the next version of the internet?
Yeah.
Just for our listeners.
No, that's a very, very good question. And thanks for asking that, Wouter, because it's there's a lot of confusion around this. And a lot of people think Web3 equals the metaverse, or the metaverse equals Web3, you know? And that's also not true. Web3 is the infrastructure layer that is required to build an open metaverse, an open next iteration of the internet. And it basically means, so it's blockchain technology, and with blockchain technologies come a variety of applications, and a lot of protocols and standards. But it is the infrastructure layer that will allow us to own our own data, own our own digital assets, and own our own identity using self-sovereignty. However, it's important to know that the metaverse does not require Web3. We can perfectly build a metaverse, a 3D immersive internet, without Web3, just using the Web2 technologies that we have today. Whether we want that, that's a completely different question. And obviously my answer is no, we shouldn't want that because we've already sleptwalked into a surveillance state, or sort of surveillance internet, so to say, with Web 2, controlled by big tech. We shouldn't do that again. So we should have what I call an open metaverse, where we control our own data, our own assets, and our own identity using Web 3 technologies that will enable that. Now, it's also important, just to add a little bit to that, because it's also important that, you know, you might have heard also about Web 5 nowadays, which Jack Dorsey came up with. And I think he read my book because I don't call it Web 5. I call it the hybrid web because we cannot build an open metaverse fully decentralized. That's simply not possible because the technology for that is not there yet. So we need a combination of Web 2 and Web 3, which then Jack Dorsey calls Web 5, which I think is very confusing, very annoying that he does that. But it sort of goes to show that we still need a centralized component for the streaming, for the compute, because we need low latency, high compute, high bandwidth, and these are all things that are not possible with Web3 technology, at least today, and probably not in the next 5 to 10 years. So we need a combination, which I call the hybrid web, ideally create an open metaverse.
Well, you know, Jack Dorsey is our next guest in our next podcast episode. We'll ask him
sounds good.
About this. Okay. Go out there.
We'll send him your email.
You two can battle it out.
You already answered one of my questions on when you expect Web3 to be able to enable fully the metaverse. You already said 5 to 10 years at least, yeah. Right? So you already answered that question. But I was also going to ask a little bit about, you touch upon it in your book, but maybe it would be good to spend some time on this so that people really, really understand the crux of all of it, right? So owning your own data, having the users own it as opposed to the tech giants, having an open metaverse, can you maybe take a step back and walk us through that, what that means exactly? Not only what it means, but how we really achieve this. A little bit more detail.
Of course, I'm happy to do so. But I think, you know, in order to do that, we need to go a little bit back in time, actually to the start of the internet, where we had Web 1, so to say. And during Web 1, we sort of controlled our own data. We hosted our own servers. We hosted our own websites. We were very much in control of our own data and our online identity. Exactly as Sir Tim Berners-Lee already envisioned it when he came up with the concept of the web. The problem with that was that it was very difficult to build. You know, creating a website or creating an online application was very, very hard work, and it was not as easy as it is today. So what happened is that there were, you know, smart entrepreneurs came up with ideas to make it really, really easy for us to create those applications, to build those websites, to host those programs, etc. And those have ended up as the big tech of today's world. You know, the AWS, the Googles, the Microsofts, etc. The Facebooks of this world. And as a consequence, you know, all these big tech were very smart because they also most of them offered all this technology free of charge. Us, you and me, being lazy as humans are, and free services. You know, that's awesome. But obviously, if the product is free, you are obviously the product, and that's sort of what happened. It sort of really the consequence was that big tech collected all our data and sort of sucked us into a world where we have no control over our own data. To give you an example of that, when Mark Zuckerberg announced Meta in October. 1 or 2 days afterwards, there was an Australian. There is an Australian artist who has the handle or the username on Instagram called Metaverse. 1 or 2 days after Zuckerberg announced Meta, her entire account, which she used as a business account for her artwork, was just deleted. It was impossible for her to get in touch with Instagram or with Facebook or with Meta, for that matter, to find out what happened. And only after 3 weeks or so, when she reached out to the New York Times reached out to Facebook, and then Facebook, oh, so sorry, happened by accident. which we all know is not true, you know? I think that is exactly the problem of Web2. We don't own our data, our own data. We don't own our own assets. We don't own our own digital identity. If you want to download your Facebook data and upload it to a new profile, impossible. If you want to send a WhatsApp message to Telegram, impossible. All these kind of things are not available at the moment. And I think that is problematic because we should not be controlled by big tech. We should have control over our own identity. I'm very vocal about that because I think it's, if we don't do this, then we sort of, in the long run, will have a problem and we end up in like a snow crash or in a Ready Player One scenario where, big tech completely controls our lives. So when we then talk about an open metaverse, what we need to achieve is that we take our control back. Yeah, and blockchain technology, Web3 technology is what will enable that. But there's no guarantee that that will happen because building the metaverse is very, very hard. So you might see sort of a link to Web1 again. Undoubtedly, there will be smart entrepreneurs who come up with solutions to make the metaverse really easy to operate in. And then we end up in the same situation. Unless we as consumers, you and I, are very vocal about is that we want to control our own data, our own identity, and our own digital assets. And that's, again, that's where Web3 comes into play to make that possible. It's definitely no guarantee that we'll end up in an open metaverse. It's much more likely that we end up in a metaverse run on Web2 technology because it's much easier. Because Web3 is hard work, not only by the developers, but also by you and me.
And you also talk about interoperability, right? Which means you need global standards, which means you need people to agree and work together, which is not always the easiest thing, especially, you got Mark Zuckerberg for Facebook building it. If we are still deciding on how to make things interoperable, we're going to go really slow, right? So I hear you when you say it's at least 10 years away. And yeah. And I guess you also talk about tokens, right, as part of the solution. Could you maybe zoom into that and why tokens would actually work and be critical in the metaverse?
Yeah, of course. So I think that crypto is what will make the metaverse go round. I think cryptocurrencies will be absolutely crucial because of the programmability of cryptocurrencies that makes it a lot easier to exchange value in different communities. You don't want to be dependent on the Bank of International Settlements, which takes 5 days to transfer money from Australia to Singapore to Belgium. We want to make it instant, and that's where among others why cryptocurrencies is so useful. At the same time, cryptocurrencies, crypto tokens, or however you want to call them, are of course fungible tokens. The opposite of that is non-fungible tokens, and non-fungible tokens, NFTs, have been a massive hype in the past years. Has completely crashed now in the past weeks, just like anything in crypto. But non-fungible tokens are actually really, really important. And I'm not talking about selling crazy monkeys for millions of dollars. No, I'm actually talking about being able to prove that you own a particular digital asset. Just as in the real world, when it became possible to prove the ownership of, for example, a house, that house changed from a place to as protection and as shelter to a means to do business, to monetize it. All of a sudden, you could get a mortgage against that house, and you could use that money to build a business. Now, the same thing applies to NFTs and to digital assets. If you can prove the ownership of a particular digital asset, then you can monetize it. You can sell it, you can borrow against it, you can give it away, you can get a mortgage against it, etc. You can monetize it. And that, I think, is crucial for the metaverse to sort of kickstart this economic the economics of the metaverse, so that it becomes actually valuable for content creators from all sorts of all walks of life to create content, to own that content, and to monetize that content. And I think that is absolutely crucial to have. And then when it comes to interoperability, from an interoperability perspective, what we want is that you can then take those assets from one platform to another. You know, I mentioned earlier in the conversation that it's currently impossible to send a text message from WhatsApp to Telegram, from WhatsApp to Signal, which is weird because we are able to send an email from Gmail to Hotmail. And and I can download my entire Gmail email database and move it into ProtonMail, which I think anyway is a good idea because it's a lot more secure and private. So we want that same interoperability with the metaverse, so that you can own a particular asset, or you can win, or you can earn, or you can grab, for that matter, a particular digital asset in a particular game, for example, and you can then take that asset to a different game, a different virtual environment, and monetize it there. And then all of a sudden, these shoes that you bought in, let's say, Fortnite, hypothetically, because Fortnite is anything but interoperable, but hypothetically speaking, you can have these Nike shoes or these artifact shoes that you use in Fortnite, and then you want to sell them on Sandbox, which is also not possible because they're different polygon platforms. But let's say that hypothetically it's possible. Then all of a sudden, those artifact shoes that you used in Fortnite in that famous battle, and it actually has scratch marks on those artifact shoes that you then bring to Sandbox, and all of a sudden you can sell them for double the price that you paid for them. That's interoperability. That is what creates value and allows people to monetize, and which I think would generate tremendous value for the global society. So I think this interoperability is absolutely crucial if we want to if we all want to reap the benefits from the metaverse and not just big tech.
Join us as we change the game of global outsourcing.
A platform for businesses to connect and collaborate.
A space specially designed for you. You can sign up as a vendor for free.
Only here at Mangtas.
Your curated marketplace for B2B outsourcing solutions. Join us now at www.mangtas.com.
You also talk about, and very much related, about social economy. Right, and you talk about decentralized finance, and then you have MetaFi, right? And maybe from a definitional perspective, just to make sure, it might be a good opportunity to maybe describe what you mean with those three things.
Sure. So if we look at decentralized finance, let's start with that one. So decentralized finance is where we try to create replicas of all our financial services that we have in the world, but then using Web3 technology so that anyone can have access to those services and not just the happy few. With the happy few, I mean the couple of billion people in the Western world or in the developed countries, so to say, because there are a lot of billions of people in the developing countries who don't have access to bank accounts, who don't have access to government ID. And with DeFi, decentralized finance, that will become possible because I can just borrow money or from you, Wouter, or I can send money to you, Jackie. I mean, it can all be done in an instant. We are in control. There's no intermediary in between. We don't have to pay 20-30% to money transfer company. We are in control. So I think that is really, really crucial. And you have all these kind of DeFi protocols that will allow you to do that. Just basically with the click of the button, you can drop an NFT in a protocol, borrow money against it, and receive that money instantly. Use that money to buy something, pay it off in the same transaction, and make a profit. as has been done quite a few times already. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do at the moment. You know, the UX and the UI is horrible, which also shows that there's only a very limited number of people actually using it. But that is something that is that has a lot of potential. So now, MetaFi is Metaverse Finance is coined by Outlier Ventures, by the founder of Outlier Ventures, Jamie Burke, who also happened to have written the foreword of my book. And it basically means it's the next step upwards, where we sort of start to combine non-fungible tokens and fungible tokens, so we can, you know, fractionalize a non-fungible token, so that you can monetize it even further. There are a lot of different a lot of different protocols, a lot of technicalities involved there, which it would be too much to explain right now. But I think that is sort of the most important part of it. It allows us to monetize it. Now, so once we start doing that, what we're able to create is we will be able to kickstart sort of the imagination age, because the imagination age is a hypothetical age coined in the 1990s, which would come after the information age, which is all about, you know, because of AI taking over all our jobs, there's nothing left to do for humans except being creative. That's sort of the idea behind the imagination age. And I think actually that in the metaverse that will be very much true, because we are able to create all kinds of content, mint them as NFTs, monetize them, and make a living out of that. So, you know, we can be creative and we can make money out of that. Now, from a social economy perspective, I think in the metaverse, communities are going to be crucial. So it's all about groups of people coming together through decentralized autonomous organizations, or DAOs, or through these gaming platforms, especially, for example, Generation Z or Generation Alpha, those born after 2010. For them, this is the community approach is just their way of life. I think if you want to have that approach where we have communities creating, doing innovation or coming up with DAOs that attempt to buy the U.S. Constitution as they did last year, and raised $47 million in like 4 days or so. I think that is sort of the power of a social economy, where we can come together, create a community, and drive economic growth one way or another.
Sounds fantastic, beautiful, but there's a dark side. Tell us more, Mark.
Unfortunately, of course, there is a dark side, you know, because I wish there wasn't, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, technology is neutral, and then, you know, people will use it to do good things, and people will use it to do bad things. And just as we have a lot of problems on the current internet, from misinformation to deepfakes to cyberbullying to fraud to pump and dump schemes to you name it, it's there. Those will all exist in the metaverse. In fact, they will actually be extrapolated in the metaverse. I think that's something to be wary of, and to fight against this, because in a 3D environment, let's take the example of sexual harassment in the metaverse, which unfortunately is a real thing. There are plenty of examples that you can find online where, you know, a woman puts on a virtual reality headset, and within seconds she's being harassed by other players, and she's being groped, and she's being, you know, all this horrible stuff that's happening. And the problem is that if virtual reality is done good enough, that experience to our brain is the same thing as a physical experience, because our brain can't make the distinction between virtual and physical. So to this woman who is being sexually harassed, to her, this is a physical experience. And that's really, really, really horrible. So we should, you know, but it's happening all over the place, unfortunately. There are, you know, in the metaverse, we'll create 10 to 100x more data than we do in the current web. You know, if you have a sufficiently advanced virtual reality headset, there are cameras on the front side scanning your room, and it scans how your room looks like. It scans the products in your room. It scans who is in your room. It scans if you have a tremor, and that might indicate a disease. And if you have a sufficiently advanced VR headset, there's also eye scanning technology in it. So it will know where you look at and for how long you look at and what the effect of it is if you look at that woman or man. And if you look at that man a fraction of a second longer than you would look at the woman, and what that means for you. And this data will all be collected by big tech. Hence, why we should not end up in a closed metaverse where that data is controlled by big tech. Because this is super sensitive data very, very personal, and that should be owned and controlled by you. You know, Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have a right to own and control that data for me. I think that's wrong. And then we have, of course, you know, we have deepfakes. Digital deepfakes are a lot more sophisticated than the deepfakes that we know of today. And with a digital deepfake, I mean, I mentioned at the start of the conversations that I have an avatar and I'm currently creating a digital human of myself, which is an exact digital replica of myself. And I'm going to use that to create sort of a voice chatbot where you can talk to me and you can basically talk to my digital twin and can ask questions about the future of work, the metaverse, while I'm asleep, which I think is pretty cool. It's very hard. There's also a lot of ethics around that, which I think is interesting to explore. But if I can do that, you can do that too, because there's plenty of enough photos of me on the internet. You have my audio now, so you can clone my voice, so you can be me. People are gullible, so if they see me, they hear me, they think it is me. Yeah. Now, for me, as a keynote speaker, as an entrepreneur, that would be annoying, but it will not have, you know, global consequences. But if you are a prime minister, or you are Zelensky, mm-hmm. or you are the CEO of a very big company, this can have major implications. And so that's a problem. And there are certain solutions against, you know, to go against this, but that also means more data creation. So, you know, it's sort of a rabbit hole, you know, where once you go in here, you know, that danger is coming from all angles, and you know, that's something to be aware of.
Which is why it's very important and critical for like people like you, experts like you, to be vocal about this. I mean, you represent the little people, or the people who use these platforms that don't know as much or don't know any better. So, you know, kudos to you, and yeah, continue being vocal about it. And thank you.
I will. Thank you.
Indeed, and I guess I just wanted to add to that. If Twitter and Facebook and YouTube have shown us anything, is that people behave very differently when they're not face to face, right? Maybe actually this could be a solution as well, because the illusion of being face to face versus, you know, a 2D screen somehow may actually address some of the problems we're seeing today.
Let's hope so.
Maybe far fetched, maybe not. Let's hope so. You mentioned earlier limited usage. However, it's happening, right? The question is, a lot of people today are, doesn't impact me today, all good and well, I'll look at it when it's there and then we'll see. What should businesses be doing today? And especially leaders of businesses and listeners on the podcast, right, that are in the tech space. What should they be doing and knowing today about the metaverse to make sure they're ready? And do their thing already.
Well, first of all, I have to say, read my book. I think that's the first and foremost important thing to do is read my book. That jokes aside, and I think it is important to have an understanding of the technologies, and also know that the train has left. You know, if you want to jump on the bandwagon, you have to do it today. You don't want to be the companies, the blockbusters of this world, who said, the internet, we don't have anything to do with the internet. There's no need to go online. Or, you know, all those companies that when social media arrived, we don't need to go on social media. Social media is a fad. Or when the mobile web arrived, there's no need for a mobile application for us. We don't do that. And you know, they all lost. They all lost a lot of money, probably, and some even, you know, they lost their business. So the metaverse train has left. Yes, it's early days, but you know, as a Fortune 2000 company or a large SME, my recommendation would be to start trying to understand this. Start trying to grasp what the metaverse means. It is the next iteration of the internet. So you, as a business, you want to know how this will impact your organization. And what I notice when I do my keynotes, you know, when I deliver my keynotes, is that for a lot of executives, it just goes over the heads, you know, and it's just very difficult to grasp this. But they have to understand it, because it's not going to go away. It's not that all of a sudden the metaverse is not going to appear, you know. It's not all of a sudden that we won't live in a 3D digital world where, you know, the internet is as pervasive as, I don't know, the air we breathe or the electricity that we use. So as an organization, you want to be able to understand what this means for you, for your business. And of course, the metaverse means something else for every industry and has a different impact for the different companies. But therefore, you have to start understanding what this means. So and that's also how I wrote my book. So I wrote my book, you know, not only to be a blueprint for an open metaverse, as I'm, of course, very, very vocal about that, but also as sort of a guideline for the next iteration of the internet. You know, I think Harvard Business Review coined it as sort of the one of the Lonely Planet guides to the metaverse, you know, to the future of business. And I think that is, prepare yourself and educate yourself as a business leader on this topic, because it's not going to go away.
I have so many more questions, but I'm being too selfish. So, Jackie, no, I'll let you go before I take over the whole show. Go ahead, Jackie.
Well, I'm sure Wouter, you know, who has read your book, Mark, and you know, he's asked a lot of questions already around your book, Step into the Metaverse: How the Immersive Internet Will Unlock a $1 trillion Social Economy. Well, my question is, at what moment in time did you realize that you felt you had to write this book?
That's a good question. I think it's for me, the metaverse is a convergence of the technologies that I've been involved in for the past decade. The metaverse is possible today because of the advances we've made with big data, with blockchain, with artificial intelligence, with VR and AR. So it's all coming together at the moment, and we are still, and even today we are, as I said, it's really early days, because in the coming years, you know, AI will become more advanced, we'll have more data, we'll have quantum computing being thrown into the mix, we'll have a lot more sophisticated and advanced VR and AR headsets. I've even seen working smart contact lenses already today, with, you know, incredible capabilities that you can literally put on your eye, and you know, have this overlay in the world. So there's so much this convergence of technology, which I've been talking about for the past decade, is really coming together in the metaverse. And as I said, you know, at the start, the metaverse is so much more than just games or virtual reality. It's every aspect of our lives will be affected by the immersive internet, by this 3D environment, these 3D experiences, and it's definitely going to be a wild ride, I can tell you.
And no matter where you are in the world, you will be part of it. Whether you're part of a first, you know, you're in from a first world country, or a developing country, or a third world country, there's just no escape.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Wouter, we have, I think we have room for
question. Not really a question, maybe just a remark, right? So we are a remote first company. I think one of the biggest changes in our lifetime is probably the remote work shift. And we very quickly recognized that we needed a better solution than just a 2D environment. So we went straight into like an office, which was virtual, where we walk around with little avatars, and you know, it's not really that realistic. but you fool your brain well enough, right? So I think we're all feeling, yeah, while we are away, it does feel like we're there somehow. And we can only visualize and imagine, you know, what if we have like headsets which are a little bit less, you know, invasive, mm-hmm. I would say, and less difficult to put on. But if it feels more natural, I can only imagine how realistic it will become and how remote work will actually feel like we're physically there.
Absolutely.
With the same benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? There's definitely...
It's
definitely going to happen. Not maybe in the next 3 to 5 years, but I think before the end of this decade, the lines will begin to blur between being physically or digitally present in your office.
Yeah, it's really a lot to, you know, let sink in and think about. But for people who are interested in getting a hold of your latest book, Step Into the Metaverse, Mark, where can they actually purchase your book?
You can purchase my book on Amazon or any of the other big online bookstores. I've seen it also already in the physical bookstores, which is awesome. Have a look around in your local bookstore if it's there already. If not, ask for it, because that's always a good thing. Otherwise, there's a lot of content also on my website, thedigitalspeaker.com, where you can find a lot of articles. I think about 500 or so that I've written in the past decade about anything emerging tech. And feel free to reach out.
And if they want to reach out to you, is it best to reach out to you at thedigitalspeaker.com, or where else can they best find you?
Yeah, that's the easiest. The other way can be through LinkedIn, Mark Verijmenam, or my Twitter @Verijmenam. But since my last name is quite difficult, maybe thedigitalspeaker.com is easier.
We'll make sure to include that in the show notes.
So fantastic, thank you.
It's really easy for them.
A problem I can relate to.
I can imagine.
And Jackie now too.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll include all of our LinkedIn links in the show notes. So, I guess that's all for today's episode. Thank you very much, Dr. Mark van Remenam, for sharing your insights and your wisdom with us today. That's just mind-blowing. And once again, this is Jacqueline de Menk,
Wouter Delbare,
and stay tuned for the next episode of Mangtas Nation.
Thank you for tuning in to Mangtas Nation. Mangtas, your curated marketplace for B2B outsourcing solutions. Follow our social media pages to know more about us. Sign up as a client or sign up as a vendor and be a part of this global B2B marketplace. Join us at www.mangtas.com.